We're celebrating the music of Thelonious Monk today. Drummer Paul Motion is known for his work with pianists Bill Evans, Keith Jarrett, and Paul Bley. In the mid-50s, he also played briefly with Thelonious Monk. It wasn't a gig he was expecting. Last month, he told Terry how it came about.
I went to hear him play. It was in a club in the village here in New York, and the drummer was supposed to be Arthur Taylor. And he wasn't there. He didn't show up. And the promoter of the concert was a man named Bob Reisner, who had seen me around town playing drums. He said, "Paul, Arthur Taylor didn't show up, man. If you want to go home, get your drums, you could play with Monk." So I ran home, got my drums, came back and played with Monk that night. And Thelonious paid me $10. I was thrilled to death. But I didn't know the music that well, so I just gritted my teeth and did the best I could.
Did he give you any advice?
No.
No suggestions of what he wanted from you?
No. He didn't say much. One time I did say, we came off the stage after one of the songs and one of the sets, and I said to Thelonious, I'm sorry, I think maybe I might have rushed the tempo on one of those tunes. He said to me, "If I hit you upside your head, you won't rush." So I paid attention to that. I was very careful after that.
Okay.
No, he didn't say much.
Well, this is.
But one time he did get up and dance when we were playing, so I thought that I did okay.
Did he dance like in a spinning around?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, like how I'm sure you've seen him do that.
And
people have seen him do that.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
So that meant, you know, to me, that meant that the music was happening. He was enjoying it, and I was doing okay. That made me feel good.
Drummer Paul Motion speaking last month with Terry Gross. You can hear Monk's harmony, humor, and spirit of individuality in pianist Joel Forrester, who got to know Monk shortly before Monk's death in 1982. Joel co-founded the Microscopic Septet and wrote the Fresh Air theme music, which is performed by the group. In 1997, he visited Fresh Air for a concert and interview.
We've been talking a little bit about some of the influences on your playing, and I think one of the greatest influences was the influence of Thelonious Monk.
Oh, that goes without saying.
Yeah, and I'm wondering what it was like when you first heard him. A lot of people hear his dissonances, or particularly when he first started playing, a lot of people heard his dissonances as mistakes, as wrong notes,
mm-hmm.
as something that didn't sound right.
His jazz was just about the first I ever heard.
Oh.
It sounded exotic to me, but I got used to it very quickly. You know, I mean, there is just something very beautiful in, for example, this sound. You know, a Monk sound that may be thought of as a dissonance, but it certainly has a lot to do, for me, with a beautiful melody, just beautiful melody. And something else, you know, he uses a lot of what in musical terms would be called minor seconds. If you play it really softly, then it's just more like a murmur because the two notes beat against each other.
You are, I think, one of the few musicians of your generation who was lucky enough not only to be influenced by Thelonious Monk, but to have met him and spent some time for him.
That's true, I'm that old.
And had the chance to play for him.
Yes.
Tell us how you met him.
Well, once I finally got introduced to him by the Baroness Pannonica, de Koenigswarter, who was his great friend.
And she was a jazz patron. She helped keep alive several jazz artists.
That's right, and certainly had the largest ears of anyone in terms of being able to hear music, you know,
mm-hmm.
and she would invite me to her bizarre palatial pad in Weehawken, where Monk more or less lay in state, a full set of clothes, in a day bed that was just as big as the room, and no bigger, and with a piano right outside. And then it was, I think, the Baroness's hope that in hearing me play his tunes and in my own way, that Monk might come out and correct me, and it might lead him to play piano more often, because at that time, Monk was only rising from his bed to play the odd concert, and then he would go back to bed.
So when you were playing and he was just lying in bed in another room, did he respond to you at all?
Well, yes. You see, the piano was right next to that room, Terry. I was right on the other side of the door. And so if he liked what I played, he would keep the door open. If he didn't, he would kick it closed. And I realized about the second time that I played for him, these were like 2 or 3 hour sessions. I realized, I think, in the middle of the second time that I was receiving lessons when he would open and close the door 10 or 12 times in an hour.
What did he like?
Well, he didn't like my interpretations of his music, that's for sure. I got the slam there.
Oh.
He enjoyed the fact that I had picked up from him an ability to not to rely on rubato, but to always play in time in some way or other.
Rubato means out of tempo.
That's right, because Monk seldom uses it. He also only used pedal for specific effects. I try to do the same thing, try and let the playing carry the time forward. I hope that he also liked the fact that I tried to express the time that I feel in everything that I play.
Play us a composition, if you would, that you think is inspired by
Well, you
Monk.
Know, Terry, have we ever discussed this piano player in exile from New York, Bob Montalto? Mentioned him. He's a guy who sometimes whose music we used in the Microscopic Septet. Good friend of mine. He pointed out to me that when I wrote a tune called Gone Tomorrow, that obviously I'd been listening a lot to Monk's most famous composition, Round Midnight. Let me play you the signature riff from Round Midnight. And then this is Gone Tomorrow.
Concert and interview with Joel Forrester was recorded in 1997. You can find out more about Joel's recordings at his website, joelforrester.com.